Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with other, because grown-ups need story time too. Tomorrow Never Knows by Giles Booth. Episode 3, The Silent Three. I'd been staying with Grandad in the castle for 2 weeks when I realised I wasn't going home anytime soon. I spent my days reading and walking around the island. I could explore the farmland, but a lot of the houses were off-limits. Some had barbed wire fences and AP guards patrolling. I hardly spoke to a soul except Grandad. Grandad left it right until the last minute. I guess he didn't know how to tell me.
Your father's been detained in Oxford. Important business with the elders, the assembly and whatnot, he said.
When am I going back home? School starts next week.
Not yet. You can stay here with me. I've arranged for you to attend the school here on the island.
Oh, Grandad.
Nothing else we can do. It's a nice little school. You might make some friends.
He smiled weakly. I didn't even want to make friends at home. I certainly didn't want to make any here. I just wanted to be back with my father and the bookshop and Miss Stranks, but it seemed I had no say in the matter. I was used to being in small classes of mixed ages, but the island school took this to an extreme. There were just 8 of us. I'd say the youngest was 6 or 7 and the oldest 16. I was one of the oldest in the class. The teacher was not like tall, beautiful, kind Miss Stranks. Miss Henfrey was tiny, ancient and wicked. She made us all stand when she walked into the room and chant the catechism. Blessed are the analogues, the only true representation of God's infinitely varied creation. The other children weren't much better. They never spoke out of turn. They behaved as if they'd been hypnotised or trained like dogs. They even greeted each other with the words, "Blessed are the analogues," instead of "Hello." I say all the children, but that's not true. There were 2 that were not quite like the others. It took me a few days to spot them. A girl and a boy. They both faced the front and parroted the catechism like everyone else, but I saw them exchange glances in a way that none of the others would do. And then one day, the girl looked my way after prayers and winked. I decided to speak to them after school. They were walking off together, and I ran to catch up with them. They were called Peggy West and Roland Betty. I'd seen Roland briefly before, the day I arrived. He was the son of Grandad's housekeeper. He was a little bit younger than me. Peggy was a bit older.
"Hello," I cried. "Don't you mean blessed are the analogues?"
said Peggy, and she burst out laughing. Roland joined in with the laughter and they ran off and vanished behind a hut made out of an upturned boat. I chased after them. When I got round the side of the hut, they'd vanished. I walked round the back and found a door. I gingerly opened it. It was pitch black inside. I slowly inched in. It was cool and smelled of tar. As my eyes adjusted to the dark, I could see they were sitting on a pile of old fishing nets.
"Why did you run off?" I panted. "No reason, just felt like it," said Peggy. "We do things for no reason sometimes," said Roland. "We're not like the others."
"What is wrong with them?" I asked.
"We call them the Blesseds," said Peggy.
"Have they been brainwashed?" I asked.
"You could say that. They're all younger than us. Most of them have only ever been taught here by that witch Henfrey. But Roland and I, we can remember school on the mainland."
"Where did you come from?"
"Birmingham," said Peggy.
"Manchester," said Roland.
"Wow, cities. Did you have television?"
"I did," said Peggy.
"We couldn't afford one," said Roland. "We were really hard up. That's why Mum and Dad came here in the first place. Chance of earning regular money. Not that there's any TV out here anyway."
What's going on with this place? I remember the island being a nice place, somewhere you'd go for a day trip. Now it's all barbed wire, barriers and AP guards.
You should know. Your granddad runs the place, said Peggy.
He does?
Yes, he does. Big man in the castle. How could you not know that? Asked Rowland.
He doesn't talk about work. He doesn't talk about anything much.
Well, he may not be in charge of everything, but he certainly manages our parents, said Peggy.
What do you mean? Do you really not know?
I looked blank.
Our parents, they're all scientists, people who know too much, maybe too much about the old ways.
But why bring them all here?
Partly to keep an eye on them, but they also need their skills. The elders of the Church of the Sacred Analogues, they don't exactly practice what they preach.
I pulled a confused face and Peggy continued. You should ask your granddad. He's one of them.
An elder?
Peggy dropped her voice to a whisper.
A computer scientist.
What does that mean?
He works with forbidden technology, but he's allowed to. The elders need it, you see. They need it to run things, trade with other countries. I think that's what your granddad does, said Peggy.
I think he has the internet, said Roland.
The what?
It's a way to get machines, computers, they call them, to talk to each other. Back before the Troubles, everyone had it, they say. Everyone had computers in their pockets. They could communicate instantly with anyone, anywhere in the world, he went on.
How do you know all this?
Overheard bits and pieces of conversations when I visit the castle and hear my parents talking when they think I'm asleep.
My mum might just be your dad's housekeeper now, but back in Manchester, she used to work with those machines too.
And my dad, he has the fishing boat, but he also does secret work, I don't know what. He disappears sometimes for a few days at a time. I know he's not at sea, because his boat's still tied up in the harbour.
What about you, Peggy? What do your parents do?
Parent? Only my dad. My mum died. I was going to say before I was born, but that can't be right, can it? Feels like that, though. No idea what my dad does, except go up to the big house, the HQ, every morning at 9. He comes back at 7 in a foul mood, and he drinks his ration of whiskey until he falls asleep.
As if our mutual distrust of the Blesseds were not enough, the similarity of my family circumstances and Peggy's ensured we became firm friends over the next few weeks. We resolved to say nothing to each other at school and refused to join in with the catechism. This incurred Miss Hemphrey's wrath, but it seemed that, aside from shouting at us, she was powerless to do anything else. She didn't even keep us in after school. The other children took to calling us the Silent Three. We didn't care. We met up every day after school in the boat hut and talked about what we knew, about the Troubles, about our families and what was going on the island. Which wasn't much, to be honest. But one day, Peggy said something that shocked me.
Of course, none of us can leave. We're all prisoners here.
What?
Sorry, I thought that was obvious. Not even your granddad. I don't think they'd ever allow him to leave.
We can't even go on holiday, chipped in Roland.
But I'm going to leave, I said. When my dad gets back from Oxford, I'm going back to the town and the bookshop and my old school.
Peggy and Roland looked at each other.
Weeks passed. It was now November and there was still no news of my father. Grandad just kept saying, we'll see, and no news is good news. I asked him if I could go back to the bookshop to get some more books, as I'd read pretty much everything in the castle and the school's pathetic little library that was mostly full of books for young children. I quite enjoyed the nostalgia of reading Ant and Bee again, but I soon tired of it and was desperate to read something more grown up. But Grandad said no. There was no one to take me, and he was too busy. One Saturday, Grandad was called out to HQ at short notice. Being her day off, Mrs. Betty wasn't expected, and I had the castle to myself for the first time. I decided to go exploring and find out what Grandad meant about parts of the castle being off-limits.
His study, where he kept his books, was locked, but his bedroom was open. It was a large room with a sea view, very neat and tidy, almost austere like an elegant prison cell. It just had a bed, an old wooden wardrobe, and a chest of drawers full of clothes. On the bedside table there were two books, a Sherlock Holmes anthology and something called Programming the 6502. I flicked through it. It was filled with jumbles of letters and numbers and didn't mean anything to me. I put the books carefully back where I'd found them and went downstairs. Next to the kitchen, there was another door I'd never seen inside. I opened it and switched on a light. Steps led down to a narrow passageway with a couple of doors leading off. I walked to the far end. The door there was locked, and I walked back towards the stairs and tried the other door. It didn't open, but I saw it had buttons with numbers on the handle. I had no idea what to try. I wasn't even sure when Grandad's birthday was, let alone my mother's. Then I thought of the book on Grandad's bedside table. I tried 6502. The handle turned. The room was dark and unexpectedly warm. It was filled with cabinets, each one containing strange-looking machines and hundreds of wires. They were like nothing I'd ever seen before. Sleek, polished metal, hundreds of tiny flashing green and red lights, and tiny words and numbers that made no sense to me. The machines didn't make any kind of mechanical sounds, they just hummed and whirred. I turned on a light switch on the wall. There was a large metal desk and a chair. On the desk there was a telephone of a kind I'd never seen before. It had buttons instead of a dial. Next to it was something that looked like a typewriter, but without anywhere to put the paper in. Behind it there was a rectangle that looked like an empty picture frame on a plinth. There was a button on the side. I pressed it. Green words appeared in the picture frame. Elders of the CSA Secure Network. Unauthorised internet access. Punishable by death. Username. A small rectangle blinked on and off by the last word. Punishable by death. I shuddered with fear. Pressed the button again to turn the picture frame off. I was about to open the desk drawer when I heard footsteps. Grandad must have come back. I looked around for somewhere to hide. The only place seemed to be under the desk. I crawled under it and pulled the chair in as far as I could, hoping he didn't sit down. I heard the door open. I could smell Grandad's aftershave, so at least I knew it was him. He seemed to be alone. He pushed some buttons and started talking into the telephone.
Hello? Hello. Yes, it's me. No, it's all right. I'm alone. Well, of course. I've just come back from HQ. There's a real flap on. I wanted to let you know. Yes, be careful. This might also be an opportunity, though. Just keep your powder dry and bide your time and all that. The schism is getting worse, and I think it's going to come to a head soon. At the General Assembly, if not before. I can't say which way it'll go. But if Britain gets her way, we'll be allowed simple digital equipment again. Even some computers. No, that's right, no AI. That's her position, that it was AI all along that was evil, not digital technology per se. No, quite. You may well think that one inevitably leads to the other. Quite so. But keep your hoard of gear safe. You could be sitting on a gold mine there. No, she's here with me. She's all right, I think. Bored more than anything. No, I've not told her yet. She still thinks she's going home. I know. What can we do? Apart from pray Britain's faction prevails and the daughters of Ada don't pull any more stunts leading to a crackdown. Right you are. I'll call you if I hear any more. You too. Goodbye.
I heard him hang up the telephone and leave the room. I'd have to think fast to get out of there and make it look like I'd been somewhere else all along. My heart was racing. I tiptoed out and closed the door behind me and gingerly climbed the stairs. I could hear Grandad putting the kettle on the stove in the kitchen, so as quickly and as quietly as I could, I went back to my room and lay on the bed, pretending to read a book.
Oh, there you are, said Grandad. I've put the kettle on. Fancy a cup of tea? I've got some new stuff from HQ, better than the usual recycled rubbish.
Yes, please, I said. I stared at the ceiling and the four walls of my tiny cell. Outside, a seagull flew past my window and off into the distance, and it was then that I knew I would have to escape from the island. Tomorrow Never Knows was written, read and mixed by Giles Booth. Original music is by Lee Sperry. Join me next time when Kim plots an escape plan with the rest of the Silent Three. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.